Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Geo Horton's Stage Page. Today is the 1st of April, 2007. We'll be starting out with our usual This Week in Boston, our list of things to see in the area, put together for us by Will Stackman. Then move along to our feature. Our feature this week is the interview Geraldine recorded with Letitia Switzer in O'Looney's Irish Pub on 45th Street in New York City, just a short walk from Broadway and 42nd Street. At least, that's what Geraldine says. I didn't hear a single fight break out in the entire interview. Afterwards, I'll talk for a moment about podcast-related issues, then let you go. But if you happen to be stopping by O'Looney's, ask them if they're one of the podcast. It sounds like a friendly place to spend an hour or two. White People finished up at the New Rep this weekend, and Well gets one more week at the Huntington, which is having a world premiere next week of Noel Heidel's Penelope, about a statue at the Wimberley. Two hits, Speakeasy's Fat Pig and Lyric's Miss Witherspoon, continue. Molasses Tank is doing German filmmaker Manfred Karg's The Conquest of the South Pole, starting this weekend at the Charlestown Working Theater. Very little opens on Easter weekend except a stand-up comic, Mike Daisy at the ART's Zero Arrow. There will be a flurry of new shows in mid-April into May. For reviews by Will Stackman, go to On the Isle at http://profwill.spymac.com. Letitia Switzer is a lady playwright from Atlanta, Georgia. Yes, the accent is real. She's a member of the Georgia Writers Association, the International Women's Writing Guild, and an affiliate of the Working Title Playwrights. Not bad for someone who just started writing for the stage a few years ago. She's been writing for much longer than that, though, having been a freelance writer, an editorial consultant, and a collaborator on 6 nonfiction books. That's quite some resume, and that's just from the first 2 pages of my Google search on her name. Letitia and Geraldine recorded an interview in O'Looney's Irish Pub on 45th Street while folks all around them were having a good time. I'm sorry I couldn't be there, but at least we can listen in on the conversation.
Sitting here in O'Looney's, an Irish pub on 45th Street in New York City, with Letitia Switzer, who's a member of the ICWP, and a playwright who's here with a production of her play in New York City, and of course as excited as I would be about this. What is the name of your play?
The name of my play is Behind Closed Doors, and it's in a production called Creatures of the Cabaret.
At
the Looking Glass Theater on West 57th Street.
West 57th
Between 9th and 10th.
And it's showing up at an unusual hour. You have to have Night Owl to hear this play on, at least on a Saturday night.
Right, actually, Tuesdays it's at 8, and Fridays and Saturdays it's at 11. So you take your pick.
Yeah, I did the show that I'm here with, Martha Mitchell, we did 11 o'clock. Night performance at in a cabaret setting when we took it to Edinburgh. So I think for some plays that's kind of the ideal time. If people come in, if it's a cabaret creature thing, maybe people who are accustomed to attending cabaret performances would be more inclined to go to something at 11 o'clock at night.
Yes, I think the Looking Glass Theater knows what it's doing.
Have you attended any of the rehearsals, or is this a surprise?
Well, I have not attended a rehearsal, and I've actually been to one performance now, we've spoken. I live in Atlanta, Georgia, so coming to New York is not as easy as it is for people who are coming across the river. And it was a surprise because the characters in all of the 8 pieces of Creatures of the Cabaret are non-human.
Oh.
Sentient, but non-human. And the Looking Glass Theater emailed me and said, would you submit something with these non-human characters, and you have 2 weeks to do it. And I said to myself, oh, don't be ridiculous. I don't do non-human, that's one thing, and I don't do a play in 2 weeks, what with everything else I have to do. So I said, forget about it. I think I deleted the email. And then the next morning I woke up and I thought, well, you know, and something popped into my head that was non-human. And then I said, no, 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 don't go there, don't go there. You're too busy, you know, you don't need to follow every
lead.
Yeah, yeah, right, right, every opportunity that comes up in the whole world. And then the next morning I woke up and I thought, well, you know, if I did this or that. And then I finally just said, I give up. I sat down and wrote it out. And then, of course, I rewrote it. But I never had a chance to get it with a group of actors, so I never heard it read.
Right.
So that would make anything a surprise, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, my characters are clothes, garments, mm-hmm. you know, different garments. And so then I got really curious to know how they would do it, because there were a whole lot of clothes and more than they had characters. And really, I came up to see it because I was so curious to know how they would deal with a closet full of clothes.
Well, would this be giving too much away to give us some idea of how they did deal with it?
No, because you just can't quite picture it anyway. I think they had about 6 or 8 characters that were items of clothes, and of course they can use different voices, but each actor was more than one garment for the most part. And for instance, there was a pair of jeans, and the actor just leaned over so far that all you saw was his jeans down, but then he had something else on the top, which if he chose to reveal that, and so forth. It just, each thing is a little bit different. And it's a very physical thing. They had to really be gymnasts to pull it off.
It sounds very interesting. I hope I can stay awake till 11 o'clock tonight and see it.
That would be nice.
What is the playwriting scene like in Atlanta?
Well, I belong to Working Title Playwrights, which is a group, something like this group, but it's
or like Atlanta Playwrights Bay. Platform in Boston, I imagine.
Right, because it is local. And we meet at two Monday nights a week just to read short pieces, but we also have once a month or once a quarter we have longer pieces read. And oh, we've performed, you know, ask for submissions for certain kinds of pieces to be in a local arts festival, and there's an art gallery that we do little, you know, 5-10 minute pieces, you know, just lots of different things. It's very active, and just like here, there's a lot of little black box theaters, little places in odd corners.
When you do the thing in the art gallery, are you writing site-specific things for that, or do you just take the pieces you would have written for a theater and do them in that space?
Yeah, but of course, no set required.
Right.
And no, yeah, it's not site. Right. And sometimes even the playwrights read them themselves, but sometimes they have actors, you know.
You have a little dedicated group of actors that you usually call on?
We have a group because when we pay them a small amount to come read on Monday nights, we always pay a little bit, and I don't think that's what attracts them, but yeah, there's a list. And so we see, on an average Monday night, I probably see 2 that I had seen quite a bit and maybe 2 that I didn't really know.
Now, this is interesting to me personally. Do you have actors who are good at feedback? I mean, the ones who keep
and
coming back,
feedback.
The giving feedback. Are actors more perceptive than, say, other writers or than just members of the general audience when you have a feedback? I really like getting feedback from actors. I think they tell me things.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I've had some staged readings in which and I always ask the actors to stay because I can't force them, but if you don't say, I want you to stay and give feedback, they tend just to pack up and leave as soon as it's over. So, but they're happy to when you ask them. And in fact, I have a play now that's going to be performed last weekend of April, first weekend of May, in Decatur, Georgia, which is just a section right next to the city limits. And I've had to do some rewrites as we're getting close to the first read through, and one of the actors came over and she read it through to me and told me if she had trouble saying certain words or certain things didn't seem natural. And you know, a couple of them I said I need it to be the way it is, and most of them she was completely right, and most of them we ended up just taking the whole phrase out. You know how it's just, that was a wonderful service. And that was with line editing. But actually, this particular play has been in development. We had a reading, and then you write for a couple months, and then you have another reading, and you write for a couple months. And I always ask the actors to stay, and they are the brightest. I really think they're good most of the time.
I totally agree with you. And issuing a general call to any actors within sound of our voices to seek out and share your talents with your local playwrights, because they'll be so grateful, and you'll get a lot out of it too.
Well, sure. Well, it's a symbiotic relationship. I mean,
right.
You can't have a play without both.
Well, and if the actor gets the chance to play roles that they probably would never be physically cast for, but that they have to catch the spirit of, and they know how to do the voices. And then, of course, hearing the same role played by two quite different actors is really valuable for a playwright.
Oh, it really is.
Because you begin to see things that you hadn't thought of when you were just sitting listening to the voice in your head.
And it brings up questions. Well, is it this way or is it that way? Well, why is it this way? You know.
And how does that how does that affect the scene in the second act?
The most recent play that I was doing, the director, I sat through the casting and just listened, and the director put those actors in audition through. It was like therapy because it was like therapy for me, maybe, I don't know. But she asked them all these deep questions. Why are you doing this? What do you really want? And I mean, someone would say, well, I want this, and she'd say, well, why? Well, why don't you have it? And it sounded like therapy of the character, not the actor.
Well, and I suppose the actors hadn't read the whole play, right?
Oh, no, they hadn't. So it was
what do they get from just this scene?
Well, exactly.
Know what's already in the dialogue and what you needed to set up for in the first act if you wanted them to know it.
And I'm sure you're aware of this, but the director would say, where are you and what are you doing and what happened
just before
and all those sorts of things, to get the actor to be very, very specific. And then the director might say, now play it in this other way, but it had to be specific rather than general. And it was kind of interesting to me, because part of me sometimes was saying, no, that's not the way it was. But the actor doesn't know, and the director doesn't care whether they know or not. They just want to know, can you be specific?
Right. And sometimes you need to change some of these things in your script when you've thought of it one way, and then you realize that if you do it the way you originally thought of it, something isn't going to work out quite right. So you have to go back and re-specify things that you've already had. You know, no, she can't be a retired baker. She's got to be a hardworking nurse's assistant, or she won't be able to be in this kind of a situation when I need her to be.
Or I leave something out because I knew. And it's not in there. And so the actor's not understanding something. And so I think, well,
why don't they get that?
Yeah, why don't they get it? Well, because it's not there. Or you say something that wasn't necessary. You know, you hear them say it three times over, and you say, wait a minute, I only need to say this once. Because that's true of hearing any reading. I mean, that's what the reading is all about. And it's the first play I've ever done that never had a reading before I came here to watch it was behind closed doors, you know. It's what you get for 2 weeks notice.
Well, but I don't think we should be too skeptical of being able to write a play in a week, because Noel Coward did it regularly. But then, of course, he sat down and worked with the actors he had in mind when he was writing it through a rehearsal period where he got to put in anything he hadn't thought of at the first draft.
I've written lots of things getting on a roll in a very short period of time, but I chose those few days rather than someone walking in saying these. And then the other thing is, I have a husband, he needs dinner, you know, I need an oil change, you know, various. I was living a life before the assignment came along. Got to go to the dentist, you know. But yeah, having a time limit and a topic limit is extremely motivating.
Well, even better is a pretty good chance that it's going to get on.
Yeah, well, that's true, because I mean, I didn't know if I had a good chance or not, but when they give you 2 weeks and they narrow it down that much, you can be sure they're narrowing down the submissions, and in fact, that may be their object.
Right, so they don't have to deal with so many. So they ask people that they have a pretty good reason to think will come up with something that they can produce, and then they only have a dozen to, or two dozen to pick from. I mean, I'm sure they didn't send that out to everybody. I didn't get a copy of that.
They said, your people who have worked with us before, and I have no idea how or why.
And you'd work with them again, I assume.
Yes, well, I had worked with them before, so, right. I mean, that was the... Yeah, I would. They're a fun group.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a rocky week for the good folk of Podomatic. They started a systems upgrade not long after I posted my previous episode, and things have been tough since. They seem better today. My stats are looking less worrisome. More of the downloads this week were of more recent shows. They still don't rival the half dozen earlier shows, but they are better. Interestingly, the number of you using the iTunes Store, or Safari, my favorite Mac browser, seem to have dropped. Internet Explorer uses inexplicably up. Anyone remember Katie? She read for us several times. She says James and the Giant Peach was a success and she was asked to sign many autographs. And GL has had several requests from older students who'd like to use her monologues. She said yes, of course. Larry Stark runs a Theater Mirror website and covers as much of the Boston area theater scene as he can manage. He is only one man, though, and lacks the ability to be everywhere each night. There are many of you, though, and that many can be many places every night and see shows Larry can't. Go to a show, big stage or church basement, then email him a quick message with the details and a few words describing what you thought about the show. He can be reached at larry@theatermirror.com. Tell him we sent you. Well, that's it. That's all I wrote for this week. We'd love to hear what you think of the show. Email us at g.l.horton@mindspring.com. That's g.l.horton at mindspring.com. Send along a recording of one of GL's monologues and we'll put it on the show. Make you famous for two or three of your allotted 15 minutes. Or tell us what your teacher said after you performed one of her pieces in class. That's almost as good as getting a small production. Email or no, we hope to bring you another show next week. This one with more readings in it. So, until next week.